Yes, so good. Great to have you here with us this morning. We are the halfway of this very intensive week. Good to have you here. And let's have a look at the, and now we have Roberto coming. Let's have a look at the program of today. So today we are heading to the digital competence area of teaching and learning. And we will discuss of interaction and activating and guiding students in online teaching. And we will divide you to small groups and do some interactive working as well. So this will be the program for this morning. And then we will have break. And in the afternoon, Lisa will guide you to the topics of assessment. And also we will have interactive session there. So we will be activating you with the mural and small group discussions today. And let's see what we are heading at today. So the topic is interaction.
Maria, yeah? Just before you go on, I would like to remind you, if you haven't done and uploaded your ID card to the first mural yet and your course plan, please do that during today or so that we can then prepare for the peer feedback pairing that you need to do then when you're doing your independent work before the wrap-up seminar.
Yes, thank you. Very, very important reminder. So please put your update your identity cards and at there so we can use the information when we divide you to groups for the peer feedback. Yes, so this is now more a topic that concerns the different areas of this digital comp edu. I can actually show it to you as soon as my PowerPoint is not freezing. So there's on this digital competence area of teaching and learning. Let's see, here we have, my PowerPoint is trying to crash, and now it did actually, but no worries, I will open it again. So anyway, there are like many topics and areas under the digital competences of the teaching and learning area, and we are kind of touching them all with this topic of interaction and activating the students today. So for example, guidance and teaching and learning. I will share you my slides as soon as the PowerPoint allows me to do it. Now it's recovering.
Yes, we can still see one slide. It's the mural slide that we can now see. So something is sharing still, although your PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's sharing the screen. But minute, here we come. Yes. But hey, as I said, we are at the halfway of this very intensive week. So we would like to hear your feelings. How do you feel after the first 2 days? And I have created a poll. And the idea is that here we have 7 different images with something happening in the images. You can please feel free to interpret them just by yourself. There are no correct or wrong answers, and two individuals may see that or interpret the same image different ways. So please answer the poll. Choose the number of the image that best describes your feelings just today, this morning, at the halfway of the training. And this is an anonymous poll, so don't worry. We don't know who is saying what, unless you want to share it yourself. So I can see that now seven participants have answered. So I can end the poll and let's see the results. You should see them now, right? Yes. So we had 4 votes for number 3 for the cat, and 1 for the number 4, and number 6, and number 7. Thank you for this. And as I said, this is now an anonymous poll, so we don't know who said and what. But if I would like to encourage you, if you would like to share your thoughts, because as I said, these are not that clear images, or we can interpret them differently. So who would like to share which image you chose and why? We are not forcing anyone, but we are encouraging. You can just open your mic and say.
I choose the cat because it's like a curious cat.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you. And Ellie, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I've chosen number 7 because I think all the course design is so dynamic and we are so active that it was like something exciting, always dynamic, and we are in a continuous movement. So I think it explains my thoughts, my feelings about these 2 days.
Yeah, thank you. And then Aldo, go ahead.
Yeah, I choose a cat because also I'm curious and dubbed some things, and then I choose cat for this.
Yeah, thanks. Anyone else would like to share their thoughts? This is voluntary. Yeah, Tia, go ahead.
Yes, I have chosen number 6 because I feel that I'm working, and this picture reminds me that the person is working very hard. So probably I feel the same.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else would like to share how you feel after the first 2 days? You have survived the halfway of the intensive week.
Yeah, it's against me. I choose the 4, but just for the course, because I am enthusiastic to learn something else, and because I really enjoy to do this course. But otherwise, I would choose other different multiple. I would select multiple images because apart from the course, there are really other stuff to do. So I feel a bit sick. Bit 7 and of course 4, but okay.
Thank you. Yes, and Martina, go ahead.
I also chose number 3 because because it's a curious cat, but also because this is really the phase that my cats do when it discovers something new, like or hears something like that he is not used to hear. And I have to say that there are a couple of really elements that you are explaining that I really never heard about. Maybe they are natural, they make sense, they are reasonable, but I never thought in that way. So I'm enjoying.
Good, thank you. Anyone else? And actually Elisa is joining us right now. Good, thanks. So as I said, this was a very non-scientific method of seeing how you're doing this morning. And as I also said, that these images are a kind of a good way to do this, just as an example, because you can really interpret them however you want. Like, for example, this image number 7, you can see either a very something progressing very fast and in a control, or you can see the horse galloping away and the rider screaming for fear. So it's up to you. And hi, Elisa, welcome to the session. Good. So now we had some sort of pulse that how we are doing this morning. Thank you for sharing your feelings. And now let's go to the topic of this morning. And I said before my PowerPoint crashed first, this is now kind of touching this topic, interaction and activating the students in online teaching, is now kind of touching these all four areas of teaching and learning of the digital comp edu, like of course teaching, and then guidance. We need interaction there between the teacher and students. And of course, why not some peer support between students and students? And then collaborative learning that requires interaction as well. And then if we look at this self-regulated learning, because often if we offer asynchronous online learning, then students need to kind of manage their own learning, plan, monitor, and reflect on their own learning, and so on. So it's also good to think about the interaction and activating the students there as well, because as we need, students are different, they have different needs. Some of them need more support and communication than others. So this is a kind of now touching all, this topic is touching all these areas. And I know you are all experienced teachers, experienced in different areas, probably, but this is now, this presentation will share you some ideas and tips and concepts concerning this topic. And when we look at the teaching or online teaching, it's a bit different concept. And now I'm saying, please feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions or comments. This doesn't have to be a lecture, and I'm more than happy to hear your thoughts as well. I'm sure you all have different kinds of experiences on this. But generally speaking, there's usually more guidance and instructions needed than in traditional face-to-face teaching. And of course, when we are online, you don't usually get as much feedback as if you're in the classroom and you can kind of read the students' faces and their nonverbal communication if they're really like, huh, I can't understand anything. But if they are online, you don't necessarily get any feedback. And for example, if it's an asynchronous course, which students are doing at their own pace and rhythm, and there's very little communication, then you don't know how they're doing unless they actively tell it to you, and if they dare to share their thoughts that actually they are not really following now. And as we know, individuals are different. Some people they prefer oral instructions, some or mostly written instructions are good because you can get back to them easily and read again and again. But some people kind of understand better if they have video or audio instructions and so on. And we will discuss the accessibility issues regarding different kinds of learners on Thursday's session. And this image I chose on a purpose because nowadays we also have adult learners, and in many universities we are now having more and more lifelong learning. So they may have various situations in their lives. If they are part-time working, or they already have a family, and they, that kind of gives you other kind of environment to study when they are always someone wanting something from you and you may not be able to concentrate, or you are very stressed also. So it's not only 20 years old, perfectly healthy full-time students that we are talking about nowadays. And when I say this, more guidance and instructions usually needed. So from my experience, the better instructions you can provide, the less burden of the questions then comes to you. Because of course, if the instructions are clear, step-by-step instructions, then students will better know what they are expected. And choose and plan the channels and the mode of communication. Now we have heard from you that there are many teachers with very large courses, like 200 participants. You really need to think how you want to communicate with your students, because if half of them don't understand and send you questions by emails, so that you will be receiving 100 emails from the class. So when and how are you communicating with your students?
Good morning.
Good morning, Antonio.
Excuse me for delay. I was speaking to my students, sorry.
Okay, you were interacting with the students, as is the topic of today. Yes, well, welcome on board.
Good. Thank
and
you.
When are you available for your students? For example, do you prefer email or do you have online guidance session once a week, for example? And what I have also noticed that students may be online and doing their studies late at night or at weekend and still kind of expect immediate response. So this is also very important point of managing the expectations, so they don't if they send you an email at 10 p.m. and then another one at 8 a.m. the next morning, why haven't you replied to me? So kind of communicate this clearly, and also communicate already before the course starts. And as I already said, this is really important, especially if you compare courses of 10 students and then 200 students, because that's something that usually provides you a lot of work to kind of double check or answer the question. So for example, provide frequently asked questions discussion forum in Moodle, for example, so you can get the same information for all participants of the course. And this is something that was quite burdensome for many teachers when we had to jump to online teaching mode in the beginning of the pandemic. The lack of presence and nonverbal communication, which I kind of already touched this topic. If your students are not keeping their webcams on or communicating in any other way, you're not able to see their reactions or if there are any. So it's kind of giving a lecture to a classroom full of invisible participants. You don't know what they're doing, if they're multitasking or if they're really listening carefully and making notes or something else. So you need to kind of repeat more, check and ask questions to make sure everyone is following. And I know it's hard to kind of force the students, for example, to have their web cameras on. Either they say that they don't own one, or they say that the connection is too bad to have it, which may be true or not. But anyway, we can't do anything about it if they don't want to do that. So it's a bit different situation for the teachers. Do you have any experiences of this that you would like to share?
It's absolutely like you're saying, absolutely like this. Sometimes I feel like I'm speaking alone. And yeah. Also when I ask, no one replies. So it's kind of tough. It's very difficult. I need the eye contact.
I need to see the faces. For me, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, and I think...
So these strategies you are presenting, and I'm looking forward to know how to manage this. Thank yeah. you. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, and I think as we are humans, our brain is designed for kind of looking for the clues of the participants' reactions and read the micro signals and everything. And when it's just Teams or Moodle or Zoom where you don't see any, it's I think it kind of takes double energy, and you still feel kind of insecure if the message is going through. Yes, Ellie, please.
Yeah, when at the beginning of the course you make them understand and be so clear that for you it is so important that they are like always on webcam on, or they interact and participate or answer any questions that I ask, or they have their own questions. So this is something I know that it is like, you know, then you will get a better grade or something like that. But I make it very clear at the beginning of my course, because as you said, I have like 150 students. So they are not a small number. So if I try to do this way, like, look, when you interact, I remember your names. And this is really, this really happens, even though there are too many. Then you know that every time they are the same students, and then you give them a feedback like, okay, you are Sylvia, you are Julia, I remember your voice because you always interact. This is what I really appreciate, or something like that. When you give a feedback that you really take care of, or you really want their participation, I think this is something that gives them a little bit more courage. This is what I think. Or when you have really interactive moments during your lessons, like, okay, now in couple, you make this activity and then you give your feedback. Or in groups, divide into your groups, or create your own meetings, like in your channels, so you can then give me a feedback about this activity. So, you know, there are always someone that are not following well, but at least you have a better percentage of the participants when you make them really understand that you really take care of their participation. This is what I did, and I think it works.
Yes, thank you, Ellie. Very, very good points. And I also think that if you put effort to this sort of ice-breaking activities in the beginning of the course, kind of give them an easy way, like presenting themselves or something very, very easy that they don't have to be too stressed or worried or excited. It's always the first time you open your voice in this kind of group that may be exciting. And also these small groups help students that are not that extrovert or kind of have fear of presenting themselves or are just too shy. So then in the small groups, they probably dare to participate more, and then someone else can be the one presenting, and that's good. And I also think it's about creating the trust, a mutual trust, because if I started in the first lecture already pointing names like, so Lisa, what do you think about this, and kind of expect to get the immediate reaction, they may be kind of, their energy will go to that, oh my god, when will she point at me? But when you start like this, as you notice that you kind of or mentioned that you create the atmosphere where you're interested and care that they are active, then it's easier to move to this sort of kind of activating as well. So what about you? What do you think? So yeah, very good point.
In addition, you know what, my students are future teachers, and where communication is the most important factor, you know, then I try to encourage them always saying that look, this is the best opportunity that you can have. This is an informal platform. You know, my lectures are in Italian, even though I'm not originally from Italy. So Italian is a second language to me, which I don't speak like an Italian, which I'm sure about that. And students know that my accent and my, you know, errors when I speak in Italian. So this is so evident. And I try to encourage them, look, I'm just giving this course to you and I'm not speaking a perfect Italian. So this is something that you should consider. You can just ask for a word, or you can just participate even though you don't speak well. I mean, like you are not saying maybe the right answer, but there is no right or wrong answer here. So this is an opportunity for you to get less shy, so you can help your students well in future. So this is something that I really try to, in an informal way, try to convince them and, you know, have them in my class in a real active way. But of course, it doesn't work all the time, but I at least try.
Yes, thank you. Very, very good points. And I also want to point out how to hear the voice of the less active participants, because sometimes, at least in the face-to-face classrooms, it's usually the same active students that don't dare to open their mouth and raise their hand like they want to participate. So also how to see that the less active or kind of less extrovert students are also activated. But yes, thank you. Martina, go ahead.
I want to say that I completely agree with Elif, but on the other side, like what she says about this thing, like that in some sense the students perceive that you will remember them positively, or that in some sense their participation will be kind of rewarded. I was sad to be careful with this, because given that students don't have the, given that for my students participation is not mandatory, I cannot kind of reward people that participate. So on the one end, I really would like them to participate, as Elif said. And of course, if you kind of engage with them, you call them by their name, or you kind of them let them understand that you appreciate it, that's fine. But on the other side, you shouldn't penalize people that don't do it, because it's not mandatory. Because if it would be mandatory in the course, then of course, then you take into account this. But if not, they could also kind of skip the class. For my courses, it's not mandatory to attend nor the online classes nor the in-person classes. So yeah, I kind of like to have an approach for which, like, yeah, I am free of judgment, but on the other side, to make them understand that they want to participate just because it's funnier or because it is better for them to understand, because I really believe that interaction would help them a lot in just challenging themselves during the class, try to understand if they understood, and in the end, of course, also have better grades. But yeah, it's a bit complicated, I would say, like it, especially indeed with the big groups, I understand that is even harder. Fortunately, I teach to very few students, but on the other side, this is also something that I try to be careful to don't have any bias towards the one that I actually participate in the class.
Yes, thank you, Martina, and I will soon introduce you shortly this flipped learning concept. So I'm wondering if that might help you with the bigger groups of students and with the non-mandatory participation. Yes, thank you. Elisa, please go ahead. You're on mute.
Yeah. Yes, I just wanted to point out about the maturity of these students, because my students are first year, first
touching the university. The first day of the university, this is my lecture, and they are very shy, they are very young, they are immature, they are, so it's extremely difficult to involve them in a, for a feedback, or they have the computer completely mute, the camera is completely black. So it's extremely difficult. They are 2-3 perhaps, that they are more mature, but 200 people, I see the faces of 2-3 people, and they're always the same, always the same. So the maturity is also a feature to be considered in this discussion, because it's not the same to teach people very young and also other people, perhaps very few people and more mature, 3 or 4 years. It's completely different in my view, in my experience.
Absolutely. And if we're talking about students who don't know each other and they don't know the lecturer, and it's everything is completely new, then it's really, I agree, hard to invite them to share and communicate and show their faces and open their mics. And yes, and you're kind of, you can only kind of ask and attempt them to do that, because you cannot force it, and you cannot force them enough and use their voice and cameras. And especially with these large courses, if we are talking about 200 students, it's easier to create the mutual trust between 20 students, but let's put it to 200 students, because we all know what happens in the big auditoriums. It's hard to get the connection to individual students, or it's always the same active ones. And I think it's even stronger phenomena in when you are in online, because then you cannot even watch into their eyes and get the connection there, but you just have the black screens or camera switched off and no one is reacting in any way. So it is not easy, and there are no magic tricks. So this is where pedagogical design and all ways and means of kind of activating students to communication are needed. And some methods work in some cases with some groups, and then on the other situation with other individuals, they may not work. So that's the sweet challenge of teaching, I'd say. Yeah, so it sounds that we share similar experiences of this.
Maria, may I say something?
Yes.
Yes, I can share many feelings that everybody of you told us. Also in Italy, my subjects are not mandatory. The lessons of my subjects are not mandatory. Some subjects are optional, some other are mandatory. But with reference to the previous slide about the way of communications with students, when I meet for the first time, this both in the COVID situation, so online and in a current situation that fortunately is in presence. I have the habit to get the mobile number in order to do a WhatsApp group for each subject, because this is very effective, because it gives flexibility to the organization of the teaching activity, including technical visits, including also possibility of changing the time schedule according to the needs of myself and of them and other colleagues and so on. So I sometimes I think I'm not a lawyer. Sometimes I think I pass the limit of data protection, I think, but I don't care, but because the student agree, so no problem, I think. But it is really effective because I can send also some teaching materials sometimes through WhatsApp group, and also inviting them to some seminars online or and so. But instead, as far as the advantages and the disadvantages of online lessons, I think that the advantages that is flexibility, because actually you can plan the lessons in a shorter time than when you have to meet them, of course, face to face. But there are many disadvantages. One of them, I insist on what my colleagues told. You don't have feedback about the understanding of what you taught to them, because when you see at them at their face, you can see from their eyes if they attended, if they listened, if they understood sometimes. But if you don't see them, it's really impossible. Sorry, it's very obvious, but that's true. Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of like operating kind of blind when you don't get any feedback. And on the other hand, about this idea of students sharing their personal phone numbers, if you're not forcing them to do it, if you suggest it and then they do it, if they want to, then yeah, I'm not a lawyer either, but I would say that it's not that that bad if they have the possibility to say no to. Yes, thank you for all these very, very good experiences, sharing the experiences. And if I go one step back to this activating the students, I always encourage our teachers to try to get the feedback already during the course, because if you get it during the course, then you can still help the students. It doesn't help that much if you get it at the final exam and see that they didn't understand the basic concepts of the course. But if you can, for example, use this kind of quick anonymous polls or light tests, so they see themselves what needs to improve, and you get the valuable feedback that this should be rehearsed before the course ends. Because it's always when you get the feedback only at the end of the course, then it's kind of information you can use on the next course. But this course is sort of lost case already. But this is valuable both ways, if you can use some sort of quick polls or tests. And then a few words of the student participation, because here in Finland we have very student-centered pedagogical perspective. And when we have this student-centered approach, we see students as active learners with different strategies, and we want to activate them to do collaborative work. So they are not just kind of passive learners, but they're actively engaged in their own learning, and they should have the inner motivation for the studies. That's the starting point. And actually, I would like to mention that here in Finland, we do have entrance exams to higher education. So for example, if you want to become a teacher, you must apply to these teacher studies, and you have to pass the entrance exam. And depending on the discipline, it may be a very small percentage that really gets through. So for example, it's hard to become a lawyer or doctor or for example, to teacher education, there are always much more applicants than actually can get through. And for example, I give an example of my home university, Jyväskylä University, which is the only one in Finland offering sports teacher studies. So if you want to become a sports teacher, you have to come to Jyväskylä. So they have different kinds of entrance exams, meaning that they have to do the sort of book exam part with the written essay answers, but then they also have to show their skills. So they have, is it something like two days at the campus area when they see them running or doing gymnastics or other tricks for them to show that they're able to become sports teachers. So this is really a process. That's why I mentioned this inner motivation for the studies, because here it's very hard to some subjects, for example, if you're very good in math, for example, you may get the kind of free entrance to study math in the university, but the majority of the students have to pass the entrance exam. So that's already one step to check the motivation of the students. But please, Tia, you had something to add.
Yes, I just would like to ask you, Maria, do you know how many applicants do you have and how many places do you offer? Well, the percentage, how many people can just hope to get the place and to study, do approximate numbers.
Which discipline would you be interested in?
For sports teachers, you told me that this is the only place in Finland where you can get the qualification.
I can get the information to you. I don't remember by heart, or if Lisa is quick to find this information, we will share it with you. Yes, let's get back to this. But I'm not saying
thank you.
Numbers that I'm not sure if I remember it correct. But yes, we'll get back to this. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And so this other concept, student agency, it refers to learning through activities that are meaningful and relevant to learners and driven by their interests and often self-initiated with appropriate guidance from teachers. To put it simply, the student agency gives students voice and often also choice in how they learn. And now, especially when we are thinking about adult education and lifelong learning, which is now growing with very, very much. So this is important because we have, for example, busy IT professionals who don't want, they already have a degree or are not interested in having a master's or bachelor's degree, but they want to get some certain professional knowledge on, for example, cybersecurity. So they just want to participate this 5 or 10 hours online course or a MOOC, massive online open course or something. So they just want to get this information. They don't even always need a certificate of it, but they want to learn something that it's relevant and interesting for them. Tia, is this an old hand or the new hand, as we nowadays use these funny words? You were muted. Oh, it was old one, yes.
I just forget about my hand.
Yes. This never happens in the classroom. This is the so-called new normal. I love this. Is that an old or new hand? Yeah. But yes, so this is something that we kind of want to have the inner motivation for the studies. But then on the other hand, I know, for example, if you're teaching some mandatory courses, like here in Finland, an example would be academic Swedish that our higher education students have to pass, or for some disciplines it may be the statistics that they have to do the course, but they are not very all the students are not very interested in it, then it's kind of hard to get the inner motivation. But then we have the outer motivation that you need this for your degree. But then of course it brings some challenges in kind of engaging the students to these topics, how to get them really interested and motivated of of the subject itself and not just passing with us as little energy and as possible.
I just found statistics about the things that Tia asked for from last year. So we have a faculty of sports and health sciences, and there are different disciplines that the students can apply to study. And for example, the sports teachers or sports pedagogy is the percentage of acceptance of all applicants is 5.4% of all the applicants get in. And it is even smaller in the social science of sports and health discipline, which is only 2.8% of all the applicants. So it's really a small amount of the applicants that get in. Because if you compare, for example, to the faculty of natural sciences, for example, for physics, the acceptance percentage is 40.3, so almost half of the applicants get in who apply to study physics in our university. So the difference is really big.
Thank you so very much. The numbers are really shows that your sports teachers should be very motivated.
Yes,
that's true.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thanks. So a few words, I will kind of browse these quickly. You the slides are already shared in Moodle, but and this may be very familiar to you, so I just kind of touch these topics quickly. Of course, when we are designing the course, we need to think about the asynchronous versus synchronous learning. And asynchronous learning, well, it's very flexible. It happens wherever, whenever the student wants to do it. Students can control the time, place, and pace of their learning. And if we're talking about synchronous learning, like now we are having at the moment the synchronous session where we are all at the same time, we are not at the same place now. The online tools enable us to do this, even if we are located in different countries. But anyway, the time is the same. And it depends on the mode of teaching that students may have some control over the pace of their learning. But anyway, it's more structured and not as flexible. And then, of course, it's not always that black and white. Blended learning combines both of them. So, for example, you can use asynchronous work as pre or post tasks for the live sessions, as we are doing in this training. And also now that we are kind of returning to the campus area after the pandemic, or the worst waves of the pandemic, we are taking this hybrid learning or hybrid teaching as a blend of digital and on-campus elements. So we are blending the synchronous learning so that some part of the group is at the campus and part of the group is following the same session at the same time online. So this is something that you can consider when you design your courses. And this is kind of nice image of the aspects of asynchronous learning by Dr. Caitlin Tucker, who is an professor in Pepperdine University, US, and she has written a lot of these asynchronous and synchronous learning. But this is a kind of a collective image of the elements of asynchronous learning, and it's flexible, offers flexibility and autonomy for students. And also, I must say, it also demands the students this self-management. You have to create your own timetables and follow them, because no one is kind of kicking you to the lectures like in the synchronous teaching. So the flexibility has two sides, as we all probably have experienced. And then synchronous learning, the benefits of it is the human connection, it's the interaction. So you can, of course, do this either online or at the campus or kind of in the blended mode, but this is where you can provide instructions or guidance or ask students questions or facilitate real-time conversations and get also real-time feedback on work in progress. And also, if you are teaching online courses where participants are at different time zones, then it's also good to think about that synchronous sessions are not always practical. For example, if your students, for someone it's very early morning and for someone it's very late at night. So if the interaction is not needed, then make recordings. And students can also work in smaller groups by themselves between online meetings if you provide them the possibility. And as already said, you can use asynchronous pre and post tasks for synchronous sessions. So you can do this kind of blended mode. And I think it's a good question. How should I spend my limited time with students in the classroom or in video conferencing sessions? What is the best use of that time? It depends on the case. And then we have some examples of tools for synchronous and asynchronous communication. And as you can see, they can be kind of used both ways. Or for example, poll can be used in a live session, or you can create poll to a learning management system and kind of students answer the questions when they have time. And then just shortly before we'll have a small break before the break, small group working. The role of interaction, according to studies, it's crucial for a successful online course. That's how you engage the students there. And you need to build the collaboration from two perspectives, both between the teacher and the student, and also between a student and a student, because getting to know each other makes it easier for students to collaborate and communicate. And that's what, as we have already discuss these kind of introductions and warm-up activities are good to create a good atmosphere for the course. And also, as we discussed, it is challenging if you have 200 fresh first-year students who don't know each other, they don't know you, they don't know anything about academic studies. So it is challenging. There are no magic tricks for this really. And then This image is something that we here in Jyväskylä University have been discussing a lot and seeing that this is how the students' needs for guidance and counseling vary according to the phase of studies. And to put it shortly, these first-year students, when they entered higher education, what is the most important for them is the process of becoming a higher education student. It may be a very big step from their previous education. What it needs to be an academic student who can manage their own learning and plan their own future and think about their working life already. And then as the stage of the studies pass by, it is more and more about building the professional identity. So first you need to become the higher education student, understand the academic environment where you study, and then you start developing your professional identity. And it's, of course, the path is full of learning processes, and it really develops from the transition of the becoming the higher education student through first year and bachelor studies and master studies and graduation. So this is seeing how it develops. And then two more slides quickly before we'll have a short break. So as I already mentioned, this flipped learning or flipped classroom. It may be familiar to some of you. You may already have been using it, but this is also a step from the teacher-centered instruction to learner-centered approach. And the idea is to turn the synchronous live sessions into opportunities for students to discuss and ask questions rather than just have the material delivered to them, just giving one-way communicated presentations for students. And then students are actively constructing and sharing knowledge. And this requires students to study the material in advance of scheduled sessions, so they really have to self-manage their studies and be active there. And this is effective way, but it also really requires students, from the students' part, this activity. And I'm giving you an example of our physics department here in Jyväskylä. Studying physics in the university is much more difficult. It's different and it's much more harder than in the previous education. So we used to have a lot of dropouts from the physics students when they entered university and realized that it is quite requiring. So our physics department started using this flipped learning and they branded it as prime time learning. They also have very large, like I would say with the master's degree students and other students as well, maybe 200 students per course. So they use flipped learning. They created videos of the lectures. And then when they come, they invite the students to come to the campus. And then there it is the possibility to do small group works and ask questions for the teachers and get clear those things that you didn't quite understand from the lectures. And they have branded it as prime time learning because that's the prime time when you have the possibility to communicate with the teacher. And as a summary slide before we go for a small break, how to engage the students? Do activate them. Divide the content into smaller units and engage them with tasks, polls, chats, small group work in between. Don't let them slide into multitasking or doing other things if possible. And there are a lot of free online tools, like we have been using Mentimeter at this course, and there's Padlet and other possibilities for quick activities. And then if you are using Zoom or also in Teams, there are breakout rooms and whiteboard and so on. So you can divide the students into smaller groups and make them discuss and then bring them back to the main meeting and share the ideas.
What is poll?
Poll is what you answered in the beginning of this section when I did this small voting from the images. I shared you the options from 1 to 7 and you chose which image describes your feelings. Did you do that too? Or did you see that? Yeah. Yeah, okay, so that's an example of a poll, or it could be
something. We were late.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I have missed that, Antonio.
Yeah, okay, maybe we'll do another poll to demonstrate to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, but kind of small, very quick anonymous voting of something. For example, I could ask a definition of some basic concept and see if they get it right or ask which topic did you not understand quite clear or something like that. Yeah. Okay, I think it's time for our small break before we go to small group work, and let's have a 10 minutes break. Let's come back. You can switch off your webcams and mute your mics and come back at in 10 minutes, which is 12 past 10 in southern territories, and for Latvia and Finland it's 12, or now it's 13 past 11. Okay, in 10 minutes let's come back, but please be punctual so we'll have enough time for the small group work, because then I will divide you to breakout rooms. So let's meet in 10 minutes. 10:30. Yes.
Thank you.
Espresso time. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, so now it's time for the small group work in Zoom breakout rooms and mural. And I will share the mural link with you in the chat. There it is. And here are the questions. How do you activate students in online sessions? And how do you create and maintain community spirit and enable networking of the students? Very easy and light questions, as we have been discussing at this session. And I will show you how the mural works, or how it looks like. We know how mural works because you have been using it for 2 days now. So this is how the mural wall looks like. There are two slots, how do you activate students in online sessions, and then the other question on the right hand side. And you can share tools and pedagogic methods, methods of guidance, and so on. So this is not strictly limited, so you can please share your ideas and experiences here. So as we remember, here on the left hand side there are sticky notes. You can choose any color, it doesn't matter, and then start typing your ideas to this note. We can always zoom in, so you don't have to necessarily change the font size here. But if you want, you can also use bigger font. But here, just write your ideas and drag to the slot that you are adding your comments. And yeah, that's about it. And I will guide you now quite randomly to three groups, and you will have 25 minutes time to do this. You answer both these questions in your group, so you discuss and then share your ideas and add the notes here. I will delete this test note of mine, and I will then call you back to the plenary at 10:40 Central European time. Any questions about this? Do you understand what you are expected to do? Yeah, good. And me and Pan and Lisa will be visiting you in the groups. We will not be there for the whole time, but we will be visiting your groups. Good. So ready to go to the breakout rooms. I will open them now.
Struggled a bit with this ideas for creation, community spirit and networking of our students. And then we decided to look what other groups did and discuss these ideas. Are they good according to our field? Are they useful according to our field, the number of students which we are working on, and so on. But this is our, you know, I think, option for our professional development. Second question. Yeah, Francesco, are you going to add something?
Yeah, I totally agree. So basically, the second question is a bit more difficult because also in the light also that you can have a hybrid lesson. So with students that stay in front, students that stay in teams. So then you have to face with two group, distinct groups, and of course maybe create maintain a community spirit could be more difficult.
Yep, that's it.
Thank you for the group number one. And as I already mentioned at the presentation, there are no magic tricks, just good to share ideas and experience what may have worked and might work in the future. But yes, thank you. Very, very good points. Then let's go to group number two with Martina, Pia and Aldo. Please, what would you like to raise from your discussions?
Yeah, I'm Aldo. We talk about the how to activate a student. We have different opinion, but we have also the same things about the online teaching. So, for example, keep camera on or create online questionnaire or polls. And we said that is very difficult to do all the online lesson because also time of a lesson is very different between presence and online. In our university, for example, we make, I think, a big mistake because 2 hour lesson in present was the same of 2 hours online, but is not in is not the same, I think. And also we talk about the how to create spirits and network about students. And so Martina said, for example, that he started to do different groups and then to keep also networking between the students because they don't know each other in online way, for example, and then to keep attention, to keep focus. She said that create groups, for example, and I don't know if Martina, you want to say something.
No, yeah, you can continue, Aldo, because indeed, like, yeah, more or less we really share the same. Yeah, Aldo gave me and Tia also nice, yeah, advice about how to actually create networking also, yeah, outside the content of the course.
Yeah, that's a very good tip. Yeah.
Good. So also, Tia, do you want to say some funded others?
You have said everything. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you for the group number two, Aldo, Martina, and Tia. And then let's go to group number three with Antonio, Elisa, and Elif. What would you like to share of your discussions?
In fact, we were not discussing very much. Sorry, because we were very few time and we were struggling with the mural.
Okay, sorry.
But the ideas were exposed here, Brighton, and were very much the same. Asking the students during the lecture is the most effective way to interact with them one by one. But of course, trying to contain groups, in my opinion, in my experience, I invite the students to contain problems, not just resolution of the problem. So this is not difficult for them to contain a problem and also the solution and to share this with the others. And the other groups should understand if the problem is correct, if the resolution is correct, and they discuss. This, at least for chemistry, is a good approach for them to discuss and to understand the point of the thing. And I don't know for Antonio and Elif. But
yeah, I think Elisa already gave a brief summary of the things that we have written. Actually, at the first part of today's meeting, maybe we already talked about the same things, you know. But I think the main thing that we have to focus on the regarding the soft skills of our students or their transversal competences, maybe asking them to have for a creative work, when we talk about also the group activities, no, let them work in groups or something, we maybe should ask them to reflect on the creativity and a critical approach on the things that they do. Not only to accept the things that we say, that we present, but have a critical approach to the information so that they could only arrive to a creative problem solution. Maybe we shouldn't also, how can I say, forget about the things that we have to take very much attention. Online courses and using the digital resources, they are all so important part of our teaching now, but maybe taking too much care about the digital. I have a critical approach. Even though I teach educational technologies, I use too many different web tools, applications every time, because this is what I have to do, presenting them with different applications. But taking care of these digital aspects, I shouldn't forget about the main aspects of being a teacher trainer, like improving them, no other competences, like for life, for life skills. So even though I use the technologies as a device, the main focus should always be the bigger one, like to improve all their competences, not just as a future teacher, but also as a citizen, as a digital citizen. So this is what I have to add, because maybe during these interventions, we are not talking about the general idea of the work of a teacher trainer, the work of a university professor. This is what I just want to add to the things that said Elisa.
Yes, thank you. A very, very valuable perspective, because as we are talking about digital tools, we have to remember that they are only tools. They shouldn't be the, even if, as you Elif said, that you are teaching the educational technology, it still shouldn't be the main priority to have as many tools as possible and get all the students just confused of everything. But they should serve you, and also choosing the tools should be, you should choose them on the purpose, so that they are the best tools for the purpose. Because now this is a good example, this mural. If you have never used a digital whiteboard system this before, you are struggling, because it's the whole new concept for you. Where do I have to click, and how do I drag, and what did I do now? But if you are used one, like there are several tools like this, if you have used one, then it's easy to adapt another one. So I think it's also good for us as educators to step to the role of a student every once in a while, because then you kind of remember and understand once again the importance of the guidance and very easy step-by-step instructions, and also the insecurity when you are thinking that, am I the only one who is not really following now or understanding, and how could I ask something without kind of losing my face in front of others? So this is a good valuable student experience for educators as well. Thank you for the very, very good points for the group number three as well. And that's true. There are topics that we have already discussed and at the first slot of this morning, but this is also a way of documenting these issues, because now you will have access to these murals, and if you want to refresh your mind of what ideas were shared and tools or methods, then you can see them here and not just have your own notes of the discussion.
I could add here something about the learning, the design and of the lectures and your teaching. In Jyväskylä, we noticed during the first lockdown that especially for the first year students, the orientation to university studies and also the fact of becoming a group was difficult because they were not all in campus. They didn't all start their studies in campus, although we tried to have the first year students in small groups also in campus. And so that it's part of the, also maybe a part of activating the students and making them feel secure in the new group and in the new studies, so that you take time in the first sessions of your teaching to kind of orientate them to the studies and to the group, and so that they feel that they belong to this group, and they then feel safe to also express their opinions and participate in the discussions and in the learning tasks.
That is true. If I would, and I could, of Lisa's what Lisa just said, I would like to raise this word safety, and also the words mutual trust that I have been using this morning. And these are very important, especially when we are tomorrow discussing about accessibility and the special needs of students with disabilities, for example. So these are really, really topical issues, especially there. But yes, that is true. If you like in our students, when they move to another city, maybe even to another country to study, and if they kind of don't get to know anyone and just stay at home and learn in front of the computer, then it's hard to kind of commit to the studies and the university as well. But yeah, we have a few minutes before the lunch break. Do you have any questions or comments? And Antonia, you already reserved the first question. Would you like to share it now?
Yes, please. I was thinking while you were showing the difference between the synchronous and the asynchronous lessons, I was thinking that if there is a high difference between face-to-face lessons and online synchronous lessons, there is also a difference between synchronous and asynchronous, of course. Above all, about the feedback, because in this case the feedback is totally absent. Of course, is missing the feedback. So this is really very, very bad. For the first time, together with Aldo from my university, from Palermo University, of this group, we were involved in preparing asynchronous lessons for Temelians this time, this year. And the other strange thing is that during the accomplishment of my task of preparing 30 lessons each of 30 minutes, and I realized that during a normal lesson, also online, because the last time it was online, you know, I used much more than 24 hours that were planned for my subject. Maybe I think about 30 hours or 53, something like that. And now when I have to record everything, I have problems in filling 15 hours. So it's very strange, because I think that when you are in front of students, you are more incentivized. You are more. You have more pressure. You have more inspiration to say that maybe the same things in different ways in order that students can understand what. And of course, according to the feedback that you have, you can repeat, you can deep more some topics instead of others. So there is much more flexibility. And at the end, maybe instead of using half an hour, you use 1 hour. But you are sure that your auditorium understood, for your auditorium, everything is clear. No? So this is a little disappointing, because this is my first experience in preparing asynchronous lessons with the video lessons, so on. So I think we must take into consideration this, because I expected more from asynchronous, really. But according to this, I'm a little disappointed. Thank you.
Yeah, and these are all very valuable experiences, and depending on the kind of discipline and pedagogical methods and everything, it may be very, very different experience. And then, yet again, it may be also different experience for the educator, and then different experience for the student. Students may, they're usually happy about all the flexibility, and they can check their recordings again and again if they didn't understand something. And then us, as educators, we are missing the interaction and communication and nonverbal feedback and everything. So yes, as I understand that. Yeah, true. Yeah, Elisa, please go ahead. One
sorry,
more
question. Sorry.
Yeah.
I like to say that I'm 200% agree with Antonio, because the asynchronous lecture is not a lecture, in fact. It's like a conference. So you are not an educator, you are a lecturer or a communicator, but not an educator. It is necessary, the feedback, the communication, the dialogue. If not, I feel I completely agree with Antonio. It's a different conception, in my view. I'm not so prone to the asynchronous because this reason, because I need a dialogue with my students. This is my ideas. Thank you.
I am agree with Antonio and Elisa, but because I am doing a recording in my asynchronous lesson for Digital Academy for them. And this is a big problem, I think, in the future, because asynchronous university is not a university, I think. It's a different thing. So you are a speaker when you do lesson in asynchronous. So and I think you need... I don't remember the name of regista in English. Is I don't remember.
To log.
Yeah.
Director.
Yeah, you need a director to do lesson in this way. So I think it's a very different university, asynchronous university. I think it's not a university.
I absolutely agree with you. Yes. I agree with
Aldo
and Antonio.
Yeah, and this flipped learning would be one way to challenge this sort of conference speaker role. So instead of making the students come to the campus to sit at their chairs and listen to you giving a one-way communication lecture, they would then do their pre-work at home, watch the videos, and then come to the campus to gather something more for the prime time from the teacher and for the small group works and discussions, and get the answers to their questions if they had some problems. So that would be one way to challenge this conference speaker role, which I understand it really, because an auditorium with 200 students, it's hard to have a conversation. Of course, you can divide them to small groups and have small group discussions, but it's not the same. And also, if it's like, also the space is limited. I mean, if we have these auditoriums with the raising roars, it's already, everything is already built for the one-way communication to listen to the speaker in front of the auditorium, and it's hard to kind of make even give the possibility for the interaction, because it was not built at that time for those pedagogic methods, that it was the great wise lecturer speaking and everyone else listening. So it's hard to challenge this, but this flipped learning would be one option to try doing this. But once again, I must say that it depends on the discipline, and it depends on the all the factors that you have there, the space and time and type of students, and if it's mandatory, if there are active teacher students, or if there are very introvert students of some other discipline that really don't enjoy discussing and sharing. Okay, thank you for the very, very good discussions. I really enjoyed how you bring your experiences and how we share the same experiences, regardless the discipline and regardless the culture where we are teaching, for example, because there are also these cultural things like if students are used to this kind of communicative teaching, or if it's more like the hierarchy and the authorities giving the information and they are more passive. But okay, I suggest that we have a lunch break now, because we will continue in the afternoon with the topic of assessment. And I think this interaction and activity students is also part of that there as well. So let's have a 55 minutes lunch break if we can manage this, and then continue at 12 Central European time and 1 p.m. Eastern European time. And you can, yes, and you can switch off the camera and mute the microphone and stay online, so the room will be open till the break. And Pan reminded you that the podcasts that you created yesterday are available in Moodle, and well done, all of you. Good. So we'll meet back here in this room in 55 minutes. Yes.
1 p.m.
Thank you. Thank you. See you later.
See you later.
Buon appetito. Enjoy your lunch.